Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Kentucky, this is obviously a different animal than we've been playing, and so their size, their length, their athleticism, how big they are down low, the way they defensive rebound the ball, really playing Hagans at point guard has helped them tremendously since they've made that change. He's just an absolute pest defensively. Does a great job blowing up your offense, blowing up handoffs, blowing up ball screens. Does a phenomenal job with that. Gets in the paint on offense, distributes it to Hero and Johnson, and if you help up, he drops it off to the bigs who just dunk it. So it'll be a big defensive test for us, obviously in a very, very tough environment against the best program in our league and one of the best teams in our league this season.
Good morning, Acadiana. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios here in Upper Lafayette. You can give us a call today on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. And that voice you heard, of course, was second-year head coach of the LSU men's basketball team, one and only Will Wade, discussing the daunting challenge in front of his Tigers tonight as they go on the road and take on the number 5 team in the country, the Kentucky Wildcats. UK, led by John Calipari, they are one of the, if not the, blue blood of college basketball. And Kentucky is not a perfect team. You could even make the argument that this Kentucky team is not the most talented Kentucky team that John Calipari's had since he's been there in Lexington, but they're the number 5 team in the country. I mean, if the tournament started right now, they'd be a 2 seed, and they'd be the top 2 seed in the entire bracket. So even though this team may have some flaws, they're still Kentucky. And LSU, as great of a season as they have, and they are the number 19 ranked team in the country. They only have one loss in conference play. They have all the talent in the world from the recently crowned SEC Freshman of the Week, Naz Reid, who's seemingly in the last 3 games has kind of found his mojo. He's starting to really learn how to play within his body, and he's being able to take over games. And we've been waiting on that on Naz Reid, watching this LSU team, because he's been inconsistent. He's gotten in foul trouble more than a few times. His shot hasn't fallen, but last 3 games to 4 games, he's really started to find something. You have Tremont Waters, who yesterday was named the SEC Player of the Week. He was a preseason All-SEC selection. So you got Naz Reid, one of the best freshmen on the planet playing basketball. You got an All-SEC player in Tremont Waters. You got guys like Big B Williams that do all the dirty work for this Tigers. You have Javonte Smart, who can give you a burst off the bench and score. You got Skylar Mays. This is a terrific team, a nice mixture of veterans and talented young players. A good coach. A hell of a season. But this is Kentucky. You're playing Kentucky. This isn't Ole Miss. This isn't Missouri. This isn't Arkansas. This is Kentucky. This is the number 5 team in the country and a legit national title contender. So as great as the season has been for LSU, and this is not taking anything away from it, we are going to find out tonight just how good LSU is. They are a good team. They're at times, they're a very good team. But we've talked about it a lot on this show so far this season. They tend to play down to the competition. They rise up to the competition, and they show you the flashes, just how good they can be. When they went on the road and Ole Miss was ranked in the top 15 at that time, and they crushed Ole Miss, and we all went back and went like, damn, all right, this is the LSU team that everyone was kind of hoping would kind of come together and gel. We saw this team gut out a win in overtime at Mississippi State, a good Mississippi State team that was ranked in the top 25 last week in the coaches' poll. On the road, terrific. They overcame a barrage of three-pointers from Auburn, a very good Auburn team who don't be surprised if they make a run in the tournament because they're kind of built that way. Plus, they can shoot the hell out of the three ball. They overcame that. They rallied, took care of business. The last two games, they actually rallied from double-digit deficits to win those games. But Kentucky's another beast, man. This is another level. And LSU has two opportunities to impress the committee. The selection committee pays attention to these games. And not only do they have two opportunities to impress the committee, but they have two opportunities to show everyone in the SEC just how good they can be. And not only that, but show themselves and prove to themselves. Because it's one thing to build up confidence by turning your season around. I mean, you got to remember, this is a team that, look, you look at their losses now, they're good quality losses. Houston, the Cougs only have one loss. They're a top 25 team. Florida State is a top 25 team. The Oklahoma State loss, that doesn't look so good. Okay. But you always have one stinker on there, right? Most of these resumes for these teams that are going to be playing in March Madness usually have one of those stinkers that you're like, what the hell happened there? Okay, so you chalk that up. That's fine. It's a young team early in the season. And they've been able to turn things around. It started with the win against St. Mary's out in Vegas. And they've been able to build all off of that. Furman, you know, they took down Furman, and they were ranked at the time. That was inside the PMAC. They're having a very good season, but they have not played anyone on this level yet. Kentucky is head and shoulders above the likes of Florida State in Houston or Mississippi State. They just are. So the LSU team has two chances now to not only show the selection committee that they deserve to be a higher seed, put the rest of the SEC on notice that they are a legit team to compete for the regular season championship and possibly a conference championship run. And more importantly, show to themselves that they have only scratched the surface of their potential as a team. Because, once again, this is a young team that is still trying to learn its potential. The point spread for tonight's game, which, by the way, you can listen to live right here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game starts at 5:30, 6 o'clock tip. 8.5 points. 8.5. LSU is an 8.5 road dog tonight.
Could you tell me what, comparatively, in football, home field is worth 3 points? Is home court worth anything, so to speak, in basketball?
I personally, just from my experience,
right,
covering
RP3 talking,
yes, college athletics, it's the home court is not as big of a deal in basketball as it is in football across the board. Now there's certain situations, Duke being one, okay, Cameron Indoor, that's an advantage, okay, that's a distinct advantage,
right?
Advantage,
right? Cameron Fieldhouse, all that, yeah.
Right? Allen Fieldhouse for Kansas, some of the cathedrals, that plays a huge role. You know, but
it's just like, I guess, how Madison Square Garden is even in the NBA. You know, you those are just big arenas that you play in. Maybe not the home field advantage, so to speak, but those are places that have that aura about them when you walk through the doors. A better way maybe to phrase this question to get the answer I'm looking for out of you. What if this game was exactly the same? Everything had played out exactly how it has, except let's flip the at to a versus, and let's say the game is at the PMAC, what would you think the spread would be then?
4.
Okay.
So, yeah. So
That was maybe what I was trying to, because the home
court
is 3-4.
3-4. Yeah. The PMAC, big up to LSU fans.
The Def Dome, baby.
They have... are invested in this year's team. It's been a long time since they've been invested
in this team. They tried to invest in that Ben Simmons team, and that fell apart before you could even get fully invested.
No, That fell apart. Now, the reason why I still say it would be like a 4 points for Kentucky, they lost to Arkansas inside the PMAC, right? That Arkansas team's not very good. And they had that place packed out with 14,000, and they still lost in front of a home crowd. So, look, LSU is 19-4, 9-1. This is a tournament team. They are going to the tournament. Kentucky's 20-3, a little bit better. They're tied for second in the SEC with LSU at 9-1. And they are riding a 10-game winning streak. You know, Wade also said, you know, we'll have to play our best, most consistent, complete 40-minute game. And that's the key for LSU. The Tigers have not played a complete game of basketball this year. Maybe the Ole Miss game on the road. But we've talked about this over and over again, and this is something that Will Wade has preached as well. This team has not played a complete game yet. Look at the game against Missouri. Missouri is an awful ball club. They come out flat, lackluster effort on defense especially. Missouri races out to a big lead. LSU has to rally to beat a bad team. They needed overtime to beat a mediocre Arkansas team on the road because they come out flat. They don't give effort on defense. Anytime LSU, as talented as LSU is, and they are immensely talented, Naz Reid is going to be special. They can't afford to have lapses in effort and execution against top-notch opponents. Because a team like Kentucky, and more importantly, the team that's going to be coming to the PMAC on the 23rd, a week from Saturday, the number one ranked team in the country who looks like a legit national championship contender in the Volunteers of Tennessee, you can't have lapses against that team. So this is, even if LSU loses tonight, and let's say it goes with the projected narrative that Kentucky's going to win, they're at home, they're an 8.5-point favorite, Kentucky is still the big dog in the SEC, and LSU is still a level below them. Let's say that stands pat after tonight. But maybe LSU can learn something about themselves moving forward, that they need to have more of a complete game because they still haven't learned that. We've talked about that with Jarrett Rozier from Tiger Details on this show. We've talked about with Tyler Nunez from Tiger Ag. That lack of a complete game and the effort on defense, particularly the transition defense, has been a bugaboo for LSU. They've been able to get away with it out at Arkansas on the road against Missouri. Okay. They were able to overcome it against Auburn on Saturday inside the PMAC. But you can't do that against great teams. Very good to great teams, you can't do that against. You can't play like that. You can't have lapses on defense. You have to be excellent in transition on the defensive side of the ball. And you got to be disciplined and you got to be focused for a whole 40 minutes of play if you want to beat the likes of Kentucky and you want to beat the likes of Tennessee and have an opportunity to hoist the SEC regular season crown or possibly tournament crown. Because if you don't and you have those lapses, whether it's against the likes of Kentucky or Tennessee, either now during the regular season or during the conference tournament, when you get to the NCAA tournament and you have those lapses with transition defense, with coming out flat on offense, not maybe giving your best effort, you know what happens? You pack up your suitcase and you take your butt home. That's how that works. We'll learn a lot more about this LSU team. As great as the season that they're having, one of their best ones in a number of years, we're going to find out a lot more about them and just how good, or scratch that, just how great they can be. We'll learn a lot of that tonight on the road in Lexington, Kentucky. More Rap Game with RP3 when we come back here on 103.7 The Game. You're home for the LSU Tigers. Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III. Cody Schutz is manning the ones and twos today right here on 103.7 The Game.
I want you to know Joey picked out this bumper selection here, so you are in good hands next week, my friend.
Oh, you're going to get Wally pipped while you're gone.
No.
It's not.
Okay, hold on. There's only
me
one way.
Me and Joey are always already
hold on
the same
page. No. I got it. There is only one way that I will even allow the possibility of me getting Wally Pipp next week to happen, and it's this. Joey, can you tell me who Wally Pipp is?
Absolutely.
He cannot, so he cannot Wally Pipp me because he does not know who Wally Pipp is.
Oh, bravo. Job security. Locking it up.
Exactly.
That's why you're my producer.
Was it DiMaggio or Mantle?
It was Gehrig, wasn't it?
Was it Gehrig? Then it was, that's the one part I'm getting confused on.
The Yankee fan would let us know.
Right, exactly. And I'm not a Yankee fan. I am not. But I think you're right. It was Gehrig because he had the whole deal and everything. But yeah.
So, the Anthony Davis.
For a smooth transition.
For a smooth transition. Speaking of replacements and dramatic moments. So, the Anthony Davis drama has settled down a little bit. But a report came out yesterday. You know, we had the reports coming out that the NBA forced the Pelicans' hands and making them play Anthony Davis. Here's a guy who's a top five player in the league, one of the faces of the league. And, you know, the thought process was, and some reports were, that they forced the Pel's hand. They told Dell Demps that you're going to play AD, that you can't sit him just because out of pettiness. Well, Mark Stein reported yesterday that may not be, well, it may be the truth, but it may not be. So NBA spokesman Mike Bass told the New York Times, quote, the NBA did not tell New Orleans that it would be fined $100,000 per game if Anthony Davis were held out for the remainder of the season. The Pelicans were, in fact, advised that the team had not identified a proper basis for making that determination at this time, and league rules governing competitive integrity therefore require that he be permitted to play. That's the league's way of saying that, or basically putting the ball back into the Pel's court, saying, you have to figure out a way that you can sit him. Because right now you can't. So you come up, because the quote that is extremely telling is the one I just read is, the Pelicans were advised that the team had not identified a proper basis for making that determination. Is that paperwork? Did Dell Demps and his staff forget to send a fax? Was a box not checked off somewhere on an email, possibly to the league office? We don't know what that exactly means. But there have been other reports now that state that the Pelicans would prefer to sit and protect the health of Anthony Davis, because obviously if he goes out there and gets injured, that devalues him as a tradable asset this summer when they want to unload him and try to get the most that they can, whether that's a deal with the Boston Celtics to get Jason Tatum and others and picks, or whether that's trading with the New York Knicks for the number one overall pick if the Knicks win the lottery. And that makes sense. But the Pels have to figure out a way to get around the NBA's anti-resting policy, which is directly related to anti-tanking. You see, here's the issue, is that, yes, from a basketball perspective and from a front office perspective, your best asset, the thing that's going to help your franchise the most, is being able to trade Anthony Davis if he's healthy. But you can't tank. Like, if they wanted to tank, and here's the thing, and here's the harsh truth for Pels fans and all the people that love Dell Demps. If you wanted to really tank, if that was your objective, was to tank the season, get into the lottery, and have foundational pieces for the future, then you should have traded Anthony Davis to the Lakers. I don't want to hear any complaining now from Dell Demps and the rest of the group. Well, now we were forced to play him. No, you know the rules. You know that you can't tank. There's the anti-tanking rules and regulations in the league's handbook. You know this. So if your objective was to tank and just have poor Drew Holiday out there with a bunch of G League guys and myself and Cody Schutz, a la semi-pro, okay, then you should have traded Anthony Davis. But Dell Demps got greedy, and he was like, I want more. And you know what's going to happen now? You know what's going to happen with this? He's going to want more, and that's great. And he's going to get fleeced in the summer, and he's going to have egg all over his face because no team now, knowing the situation that AD is not going to want to re-up with anyone, that he has four teams that he's going to re-up to, no team is going to borrow him for a year rental, first of all. And second of all, do you think someone like Danny Ainge just isn't sitting back and he's slowly tapping his fingers together like a Bond villain going, ha, 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 ha. Oh, Dell Demps, oh, I'm going to devour you come summer. And that's exactly what's going to happen. So, if you wanted to tank, then you should have traded AD and dumped him off to the Lakers and got the garbage in return. Kuzma and a bunch of garbage. When we come back, we'll talk more Pels talk with our good friend Les East of Crescent City Sports right here on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsh III, right here on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. You can give us a call today on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, like always, 337-706-0111. And we're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline to welcome on our good friend from Crescent City Sports. He covers the New Orleans Saints and the New Orleans Pelicans. It's the one and only Les East. Les, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing well, Raymond. I heard you allude to this being one of the homes of LSU basketball. Do they have any interesting games coming up anytime soon?
just a few games that you know will probably be played on the Ocho. You know, you may be able to catch it if you have the package, brother. Let's get right to it. You know, All-Star break is coming up this weekend, correct? In Charlotte?
Yes, it is.
And so we know Anthony Davis is going to be headed to Charlotte. He's was voted in, selected as a reserve. So he'll be playing, representing the Pels in the All-Star game. We have two games. We have tonight's game with the Magic, and then Thursday on Valentine's Day is the game against Oklahoma City Thunder and MVP candidate Paul George. So what's the likelihood, Les, that these last two games – and the All-Star game are going to be the last times we see Anthony Davis actually play significant minutes as a member of the New Orleans Pelicans this season?
Well, first of all, it occurs to me that he could suit up for the All-Star game, and instead of New Orleans, it could say TBD, to be determined. But, I would have said a couple of weeks ago, after the trade request, and especially after a couple of conversations with Alvin Gentry, that he already would have played his last game with the Pelicans. In fact, I think I alluded to that on this show, but that was before the NBA intervened and made them go against their wishes and start playing him. So I think that's going to be the situation going forward, is that they're going to go ahead and start him and play him under an NBA mandate and the threat of a $100,000 fine per game if they sit a healthy Anthony Davis. But I do think they're going to try and kind of gradually squeeze him out of the picture to some degree. I mean, they've already said they're going to lower his minutes. He had been playing up around 38, which is probably too much for anybody. He was 25 the first game back. I think he was closer to 35 against Memphis. I don't think that was the plan. I think they got desperate because their offense was so poor. They put him back in the fourth quarter. But I think they may try and continue to lower those minutes to where they're 30 per game, maybe even a little lower on occasion. But, you know, I think the NBA has told them they need to play him as long as he's healthy and wants to play. And I don't see either of those things changing right now.
Les, I find it interesting because a lot of the reports are his teammates – are maybe disappointed that he wants to leave and that he made the trade request. But for the most part, it seems like they support his decision to do so. How does that work in a locker room like that when you have the superstar who has demanded a trade, the team did not trade him, he says he still wants to play, and if you're his teammate, you're like, yeah, I want to play. I want AD to play because I want a chance to win because all those guys are competitors. And that's the problem with tanking is that these guys like Okafor and all these other players, they're getting an opportunity to shine, and they want to play, and they want to win. And they know AD gives them the best chance to do that. So how does Alvin Gentry approach that with his team?
Well, we've talked to him about that a couple of times in the last week because that really is a tightrope he's walking in, and probably the single biggest challenge facing him right now is how does he continue to give significant minutes to guys like Jahlil Okafor and Kenrich Williams and Frank Jackson, who have seemed to have thrived with additional minutes with all the injuries and with Davis out for a while. So they don't want to slow down the progress of those guys because, unlike Davis, they're going to be part of the future here probably. But at the same time, in order to salvage this season and you know, have some success, they need Davis out there for significant minutes. So it's a real juggling act that Alvin Gentry has to do to try and accomplish both of those things. I don't think he can do either one to the extent that he would like, but he has to try and do both. And that's really a trick for him is getting Davis enough minutes to give him the best chance to win and yet not sacrificing development of the younger players. It's really tricky, and I think it's probably something he's going to be calculating every night based on matchups and game flow and things like that.
We're on with Les East of Crescent City Sports. Les, were you surprised by the combination of first him being booed in his first game back and then being cheered loudly as the game progressed when they picked up that victory last week?
Actually, no. I think he's the only person in the world who is surprised by the fact that he was booed. And because, I mean, basically he spurned New Orleans. He says, I don't want to be here. Now, it's a little more complicated than that. But if you're a fan who's supporting him for 6.5 years, yeah, you're going to be bothered by the fact that he has chosen to go somewhere else, even though it's understandable. But he's turning his back on New Orleans, decided he would rather be somewhere else. It's probably frustration at what it means to the franchise more than anger at him, I think. And they needed to release that frustration, and that was the most cathartic way they could do it. I didn't think that they would be able to maintain that sort of animosity toward him because he has played so hard and so well for so long, unless they sensed that he was no longer giving the kind of effort he has always given. But, I mean, he scored the first few points of the game. He had 10 points in the first quarter. He made some big defensive plays. He played as hard as he ever has. And I think it was easy for him to win back the majority of them, and it was really a fascinating dynamic because the boos were there early, and yet by the second quarter, there were a faction of fans that were being exuberant in chanting his name every opportunity they got, and it was like there was a small group of fans were more passionate about supporting him than a larger group of fans were and booing him. And eventually, because the Pelicans started playing better and he played better, and because of those vocal fans, I think that contributed to the emotions turning in his favor, to the point where in the fourth quarter they were chanting his name, trying to get Gentry to put him back in the game.
Les, did the Pels front office, Dell Demps, and the rest of the group not know that the league was going to come after them for attempting to tank? Because it just seems, once again, it just fits this narrative of incompetence. Because the tanking, anti-tanking is part of the rules. They're very on it. If you're Chandler Parsons, they don't give a damn because you're a reserve. But if you're a top five player in the league and you try to sit them, they're going to come after you. And they just seem like they released a statement saying, well, you know, about the integrity, and you could tell that the NBA's top dog got to them, made a phone call on the bat phone and said, hey, you're going to play AD. Did they not know that was coming? Like that's my question to you. Did they honestly believe that they were going to be able to just sit him for no reason and just be done with it?
I think they probably did, and I think there's plenty enough blame to go around here. I think they miscalculated there. I think they're a little bit naive there in thinking that they could just blatantly sit a healthy elite player because he'd asked for a trade. But the NBA shares a lot of the blame for this because of their inconsistent and nebulous policy. You know, Kawhi Leonard sat out a season. He chose to sit out a season. Chandler Parsons sitting at home. J.R. Smith sitting at home. So is the policy you have to be, there's a threshold of how good you have to be before it's okay to be a healthy scratch? Or is the point, if the player wants to play, you have to play him? So if Anthony Davis says, I don't want to play, then it's okay to sit a healthy all-star? And what does that say about the integrity of the game? So there's absolutely no clarity coming from the NBA office on what the parameters are for handling a situation like this. And the Pelicans, I think, went into this without thinking it through, without reaching out to the front NBA office to get an idea of what they could do. So they were they mishandled it in that regard. But the NBA has botched this with their inconsistency for an extended period of time. And they need to come out and explain what their policy is, because it's unclear to the public what their policy is. And I'm not sure they even understand what their policy is, even though I think this has been collectively bargained to some degree.
Les, having AD out on the floor, let's put aside the fact that if he gets injured, that hurts his value as a tradable asset, which they want to unload during the summer. Let's put that aside. Also having Anthony Davis continue to play for them the rest of the season, even though they're not going to be making the postseason, they have an outside chance of being able to catch the Lakers for the 8 seed. It still helps draw fans, and it still helps sell tickets, right? I mean, that's the other component of this, is that New Orleans is a tough city as it is to get folks excited about basketball, always has been. And Anthony Davis is the draw. And even though they may be losing and they may not make the playoffs, he still helps sell tickets, right? Compared to if he's not there and they just bench him and he's not playing.
Well, yeah, I think it's intertwined. I think the best way to sell tickets is to play meaningful games down the stretch. And the best way to play meaningful games, even if it's a long shot to make the playoffs, is to have Anthony Davis out there and continue to win and continue to at least mathematically be alive in the playoff race. So, yeah, it's going to help them sell tickets if he's out there, because they're going to be a better team. And it just helps the impression that the organization gives out if they're out there competing and winning games and at least to a limited degree hanging in the playoff race. If they just sit him and say, go away, and he goes home and this team is playing without him, they're going to lose a lot of games, and they've already sent out the impression that we don't care whether we win any more games this year or not, and they're not going to win many more games, and it just makes it look like a franchise that is in total disarray, and it may be headed in that direction. And it also sends a bad signal going forward to any potential free agents who already have enough reasons to be dubious about coming to New Orleans. They might say, well, those guys don't care about winning. Look what they did. They sent Anthony Davis home. They don't care. Why in the world would I want to go there? So it's just, there are myriad reasons why his presence is helpful to them down the road, even though they are running the risk of the injury, which to me is the only real potential negative to having him out there.
Les, what do you make of the reports of Jason Tatum, who's been mentioned as a player that the Pels want in return for Anthony Davis if a trade with the Boston Celtics does occur this summer? What do you make of the reports that Tatum would not mind being the face of the Pelicans? Are you surprised by that, and do you believe that?
I believe it. I'm a little surprised you said it. In the current climate, that's probably going to get him a fine. You know, if the Milwaukee Bucks co-owner can get fined for answering a question about his team potentially being on a list of destinations for Anthony Davis, anybody who says anything about the potential of being somewhere else at some point in their life seems subject to a fine. So I'm a little surprised he said it.
Yes, tampering is tampering is the new buzzword. It's the new collusion of buzzwords.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just strange that, first of all, the Bucks owner got fined for answering a legitimate direct question about, doesn't it say a lot about the progress of your organization that you're one of 14 Anthony Davis would consider a trade to? And so he answered the question honestly. But LeBron James didn't get fined for saying, yeah, I'd love to meet with Anthony Davis. All he got was a sternly worded press release that didn't mention him by name. So another example of how the NBA office is sending out mixed signals and overreacting in some regard. So it surprises me a little bit that he said it within this climate, but I think he probably means it. And, you know, I'm old enough to remember when the NBA front office was something we all thought the NFL office should aspire to be. And now it looks like the NBA office is turning into the NFL office.
And this is what I have to say to that. Woof. Just, yeah, that's not what you want to become by any stretch of the imagination. We don't have enough time on the show today to go into that, brother. But, Les, I appreciate you as always, my friend. Enjoy this week's games, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Great. Thanks, Raymond.
Les East, Crescent City Sports, breaking down the Pels and the Anthony Davis situation. The ongoing, never-ending Anthony Davis drama. Are you exhausted by it all yet? I kind of am. I feel like I need a nap.
It's just one of those, I to try to make an analogy, it's like when you get a movie trailer for a movie, to make it more specific, like the Avengers trailer. Exactly.
There we go.
You get this Avengers trailer, and then you have all this, oh my God, look, let's talk about it. Avengers trailer, trailer. But then 3 months passes before you get another trailer or another teaser or something like that. And yet in those 3 months, somehow, like, people have found a way to make that trailer the topic of discussion for three solid months. And it's like, how many times can we really talk about this same issue? Like, we've come to the point now where nothing can happen. Nothing will happen. And yet we're still going to, I mean, it's like sports clickbait.
His last game, though, will be interesting. His last game this season, if they're gonna let him play, the last game inside the Smoothie King Center, that'll be a game to go to, because that'll be the end of
that's
the story.
The end of an era,
right?
Yeah.
That'll be the end of it.
That's
and
the
then,
end.
And then the Pels will get fleeced in the offseason with they'll trade away Anthony Davis and they'll get a player and a bag of rotten garbage in return.
Right. Not even Cracker Jacks.
And Dell Demps will be like, look what I did. I'm amazing.
Well, and then they'll fire Dell Demps after that. They'll do all that. Then they'll fire Dell Demps.
2 minutes after the end of the season, Dell Demps should begin that. His stuff, he shouldn't even be allowed to pack up his own office. It's he should be walking back to the office thinking he's going to lounge down in his little couch area, and they're going to have it locked, and there's going to be a big 350-pound bouncer at the door going, sorry, sir, you're not allowed here no more.
It's like when that someone you don't want at your house like goes to take their shoes off, and you're like, no, keep your shoes on. Like, don't get too comfortable.
No, not here. Not here.
No, sir.
We'll wrap up this first hour of Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios here in Upper Lafayette. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. It's been a lot of talk this year about the NBA MVP race. The Greek Freak is in the mix. The Bucks are the best team in the Eastern Conference, and he's playing at a phenomenal level. Well-deserved. The Beard, James Harden, 30 straight games of scoring at least 30 points. Phenomenal. He's having a terrific season. He may even be having a better season than he did last year when he won the MVP.
Statistically, I think he is.
Right.
Maybe not, you know, the whole team overall is performing at that level, but statistically, James Harden, I believe, is better this year than last at this point.
Kawhi Leonard, tremendous season for the Toronto Raptors.
I love the fact that he's doing as well as he is in Toronto, because it just goes to show that he is that dude. It wasn't just Popovich. It wasn't just he came up around Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili and these guys, Parker that got him straight. Like, no, this kid can just ball. So I'm glad to see him doing as well as he is.
And all three would be worthy of the NBA MVP. But I'm going to throw a name out there for you. He plays for Oklahoma City Thunder. And no, it's not Russell Westbrook. It's Paul George. This is what Paul has done in the last 12 games, which the Thunder have won 11 of those 12 games. 31 points, 31, 36, 23, 36, 37, 43, 37, 39, 27, and then 45 and 47. And one of those 40-point-plus games was against James Harden and the Rockets, and the Thunder won that game. Paul George is playing the best basketball of his life and deserves to be in the NBA MVP conversation. Plain and simple. When we come back, we're going to tackle some football in the second hour here of the Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't set on your locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
He's got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Faith for me is believing in the Son of God, Jesus Christ, and he is the only one I've ever met that can handle my junk.
The gift that is Hugh Freeze just keeps on giving.
I was wondering, I was like, how do you follow that? Like, how do you?
He blessed us. It's truly a blessing, Hugh Freeze is. I am pretty positive, though, that our brothers and sisters that are rebels from University of Mississippi.
Are they black bears?
Land sharks?
Whatever.
The Fighting George Faustas are not thrilled today. I actually talked to George yesterday about this. He was like, well, at least we got to keep the Sugar Bowl trophy. I said, there you go, brother. There you go.
You can hang your hat on that Sugar Bowl trophy.
If you didn't hear, Ole Miss, which was already dealing with NCAA sanctions and a postseason ban due to inappropriate behavior, recruiting, and a litany of other things under the previous head coach, Hugh Freeze, who led them to unprecedented heights of numerous wins and a Sugar Bowl victory over Oklahoma State, got hammered again by the NCAA. Ole Miss is forced to vacate 33 wins over six seasons for NCAA violations.
Faith for me is believing in the Son of God, Jesus Christ, and he is the only one I've ever met that can handle my junk.
Thank you, Hugh. We've been holding that. I've been waiting to use the Hugh Freeze clip for a while.
You told me to save it, and I did.
You did. God bless you. So, vacate 33 wins over six seasons between 2010 and 2016 for fielding ineligible players, Athletic Director Ross Bjork said Monday night. It's the last part of the process, he said at a town hall meeting in Cleveland, Mississippi. Big up to Cleveland, Mississippi. Have you ever been?
That sounds like a sad place.
If I remember, it's on the I-20. It's off of I-20 if you're going through that.
That sounds
Years
sad.
Ago, I dated a woman in northern Alabama, and I lived in so I'd go up to Monroe and get on 20 and take that way to get up to northern Alabama. Yeah, I dated a woman that we lived 7 hours apart. That's a story for another time.
I can't wait. I was like, say something clever. Say something clever. I got nothing.
So he says, in a way, it's just a piece of the paper because you saw those games. And look, I will say that. The vacating of wins is one of the most asinine things that the NCAA does. Like, I remember the Fab Five playing at Michigan. I remember those trips to the Final Four and the national championship games. I remember watching them in front of my television. So you can take the wins away that led to that, and you can take all those games away, and you can forfeit them all. I still remember them.
Yeah,
they still occurred. They still happened.
Did the Cajuns win or not win four New Orleans Bowls in a row?
We watched them win four New Orleans Bowls in a row with Broadway as a quarterback. Yeah,
that's how I remember it too.
Yeah, so it's silly, it's asinine, and it's just it lacks teeth because it's not a real thing. Like taking away scholarships and banning people from postseason and fining a university money, that matters. But taking away wins from kids, many of them who never cheated and never did anything and didn't do anything wrong, is just stupid. It's stupid and it's lazy. It's the laziest thing the NCAA does, is just the vacating of wins, whether it's for basketball or baseball or football or whoever it may be.
I mean, even is Reggie Bush not a Heisman Trophy winner?
Yeah, that's just like...
I mean, so there's just that year, there's no one. No one won the Heisman Trophy that year. No, Reggie Bush won the Heisman Trophy.
Did we not watch USC absolutely trounce Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl for the national championship the year before?
Right.
Yeah, I remember that.
Now, what I think is important to make clear here is that, at least from my end, and I'm pretty sure Ray's the same way, we're not trying to say that these violations and Reggie Bush getting a house for his mom or whatever the case was, those things are still wrong and they shouldn't be done and they should be caught and punished.
Correct.
What we're saying is that the vacating of wins is a very easy and cheap punishment. The punishment needs to be something other than just giving away. I didn't want it to come across as we're saying all these violations, they shouldn't be thought about. No, they should be punished, but the way they punish them by saying, oh, those kids didn't win that game, bullcrap.
The vacating of wins is a very lame reactionary approach to discipline. You're not doing anything to prevent this from happening. Okay? You're not giving anyone any initiative not to cheat, okay? By, you know, giving them a small fine and having say, oh, you can't go to the bowl game for 2 years, and we're going to take away, we're going to vacate your wins. So, like, that's not going to stop me. How about making like it be a $10 million or $25 million fine? Like, for the example for Ole Miss. Ole Miss received the sanctions after being accused of 15 level one violations under Coach Hugh Freeze. The NCAA panel on infractions said the school lacked institutional control and fostered, quote, an unconstrained culture of booster involvement in football recruiting. Okay. So it was egregious. They had boosters bankrolling, getting recruits to come in there and taking care of recruits. Illegal. Violates all the rules. Why don't you slap Ole Miss with a fine of, say, $25 million? Take away scholarships? Like, there's other ways of doing this. The vacating of wins is stupid. It's just dumb.
At the end of the day, it doesn't do anything.
And I also make this argument as well. You say, oh, you know, you're taking away what USC did with under the Pete Carroll and with Reggie Bush. Yeah, Reggie's parents had that house that they lived in. They got taken care of, right? Did that help Reggie take punt returns back for touchdowns? Did that house enable Reggie to get well over 2,000 yards all-purpose from scrimmage yardage? No. No. Okay? So that's the other thing. Like, the process of these big-time college programs and even mid-level college programs doing the recruiting and paying off and paying kids players, that's been going on for decades. Watch the 30 for 30 on Pony Express.
I was waiting to bring up the death penalty for SMU. I mean, do you think that was effective? You think the SMU football program right now is trying to play the same little kind of games they played then?
They used to drop off duffel bags of money on recruits' front porches and leave them there.
Yeah.
Okay? It's always been there. Okay? So if you want to regulate it, hurt them where it hurts. Hit them where it hurts the most. In their pocketbook. Make an enormous fee. $25 million. I guarantee you, it's one thing to pay like a $50,000 fine. If you go big and go home and go, you violate so, you are this egregious, we are fining you, the university, $25 million. A quarter of $100 million. I guarantee you there'll be a lot less of that going on.
Here's a thought. What if, I've never heard of anyone, of any violation getting this type of punishment or anything. This is a complete, from what I know, an original thought that just popped into my head. Specifically, since we're talking about Ole Miss, would it hurt them more to hit them with a $25 million fine or whatever the number is, like you're saying? Or what if you only allowed Ole Miss football to play conference games that season? What if you took away their, instead of canceling, their, like SMU got the death penalty where their entire season was canceled. Sorry, guys, you're done. Instead of canceling an entire season, you know, of course, they're not going to a bowl game. That's all out of the question. They're still going to play their conference games because they don't want to affect the other teams in the conference, but you take away any non-conference game. They're going to play just those specific, so any extra money they would make.
Better yet, I'll take it to the next level. I like what you're thinking here. Let them play their conference games. Also, let them play non-conference opponents, and they get none of the gate.
Or give it back the other way or something. Or yeah.
They get none of the gate.
That's
the
what I'm
opponent
trying to say.
Gets all the gate and do that. So, yeah, you get to play. You get your banned from the postseason. You don't have to kill your football program, but any money that you make on game day from concessions or ticket sales, you don't get to have.
In non-conference games. I don't think the SEC, a conference would never agree to that. In a conference game, the conference would still want their school to make money. But in non-conference games, I think maybe you could see the NCAA.
Yep.
It's not like they have any checks and balances to keep them in line. They can,
or like
just
when the Raging Cajuns play Ole Miss. I mean, that would be a you just use that as an example.
Right.
Okay, that's a non-conference opponent. Okay, well, you get all the gate.
And maybe a cut of concessions even or something. So they don't, who knows?
Well,
we're talking
again,
hypotheticals
right,
here.
But once again, you hit them where it hurts, right?
Right.
In their back pocket. For the Rebels, they had to vacate 4 wins from 2010, 2 more from 2011, 7 from 2012, 7 from 2013, 8 from 2014, and 5 from 2016. So this is over a course of multiple seasons. The vacated wins do include the most notable. That's the 23-17 win over mighty Alabama in 2014. That's when College Game Day was there in town in Oxford. The students stormed the field, took the goalpost down. and had them tour the campus. So that gets removed. Some of the charges do date back to just not Hugh Freeze and his junk. It's also Houston Nutt, who was fired in 2011. But most of the cases do involve happen under Freeze. It involves everything alleged academic booster and recruiting misconduct. We know, obviously, former offensive lineman Laramie Tunzel. He was the one whose father, I do believe, released the video leading up to the draft of him using a gas mask as a bong. His dad put that on, put him on blast for that.
That's next level, kid.
Oh, that's next level. He still got drafted, by the way. He played. He was ruled ineligible. He played in 7 wins, so that's part of that as well. Now in the record books, Nutt will have 18 wins instead of 24, and Freeze has only 12 wins instead of 39. Mississippi has already served its 2-year postseason ban in 2017 and 2018 and was given 3 years of probation through 2020, as well as scholarship reductions and recruitment restrictions. So an alleged rival of LSU gets hammered. But they do get, ironically, they get to keep the Sugar Bowl trophy. That's a big deal. I think the AD even tweeted out that the Sugar Bowl trophy is staying inside the complex. Like, that was a badge of honor to the Rebel fans. It was like, hey, guys, this sucks. We're just on postseason for 2 years. And now we got to vacate even more wins. And I have to make my sports information director go through and mark out and redo the media guides, which is a total pain in the rear end. But we still get to keep the Sugar Bowl trophy. And that's a damn nice trophy, by the way. If you ever seen it up close, Cody, it's pretty awesome. Sugar Bowl trophy is pretty awesome.
I haven't, but I believe you.
So Ole Miss gets hammered. Will it stop? Don't know. Don't know. We'll see if Ole Miss can turn around. The last 2 decades, ever since they got rid of David Cutcliffe, because he wasn't good enough winning 8 to 9, 10 games a year, and they got rid of him, it was Ed Orgeron, Houston Nutt, Hugh Freeze.
Womp, womp, womp.
That is not a trifecta that you're going to be writing books about, or at least books that are going to put your football program in a positive light, rather. More.
I'd read a Freeze biopic. I guess that would be a movie. But
do you know that? I would read. Did you know Freeze was on staff for Bay Bay, right? For Coach O.
That makes sense.
Coach O gave him his break. He was a low level assistant on that staff back in the day.
Did you know the Bash Brothers from the Mighty Ducks movies were based off of Hugh Freeze and Coach Ed O? Completely, totally just made that up.
More rap game with RP3 when we come back here on 103.7 The Game. Cleveland Browns general manager John Dorsey there talking about his decision to sign former Kansas City Chiefs running back Kareem Hunt to a 1-year deal, $1 million. Is anyone surprised? Like, if you're surprised this morning that an NFL team signed a guy who viciously threw down a young woman and then kicked her while she was down on the ground, then where have you been? Like, have you not been watching the NFL and how they operate for the last 10 years? This is business as usual. Don't get me wrong. It's despicable. But this is business as usual. If you're talented enough, I've always said this, if you're talented enough, you're going to get another opportunity. You just are. The reason why Ray Rice, after the video was leaked of him punching and dragging his then fiance, soon to be wife, out of an elevator all those years ago, is because Ray Rice was already on the downhill of his career. If they thought that they could get something out, if a team thought they could still get something out of Ray Rice, they would have signed him. but he was already on the tail end of his career. Kareem Hunt, he just wrapped up his second season, man. He's young, dynamic, playmaker. And from a football standpoint, if you're the Cleveland Browns and you had a very good season and you have a nice young nucleus of players, you think you have your franchise quarterback in Baker Mayfield, you have young players on the defensive side of the ball with Jabril Peppers, Myles Garrett. You have a nice thing going where you were a team that flirted with being a 500 team for the first time in a long time. You're building something there. You have a new head coach, an offensive-minded guy in Freddie Kitchens. From a just football standpoint, Kareem Hunt for $1 million for 1 year? Bro, I'm taking that all day long. Running to the bank, cashing that check. That is awesome. But it's not that simple, right? For us, we get outraged when we saw the video and Kareem Hunt admitted that he lied to the Kansas City Chiefs about what occurred that night. By the way, ironically, by the way, the incident where he shoved and kicked the woman, do you know what city it took place in?
I'm going to guess Cleveland.
You sure did. He's from Northeast Ohio. Played at Toledo.
O-H-I-O.
Okay. And almost a year ago to the day, on February 10th, when Hunt shoved the woman in the hotel hallway, then shoved another individual so hard that he tumbled into the woman and knocked her down, and then he promptly went over and kicked the woman as she crouched on the floor. The Browns signed him to the one-year deal. Now, the hallway assault that we've seen the video for is one of three instances involving Kareem Hunt of violence. One of three. In January of last year, no, three violent off-the-field acts in just 2018. In January, a man told police in Kansas City, where he was playing as a member of the Chiefs, that his nose and ribs were broken by Hunt and teammate George Atkinson during a nightclub brawl. And a witness said Hunt punched another individual during an altercation in June. The Chiefs, who said they were aware of the February assault and had already spoken to Hunt even while he took the field for them every week at the start of this season, released Hunt back in November when TMZ, who, by the way, released the video of Ray Rice, released the video to the public. But once again, here's a guy that had problems, domestic violence against women, yet he still gets another opportunity because he's like 24 years old. And he scores double-digit touchdowns for you and can break off big plays. And the Browns need playmakers surrounding Baker Mayfield. So at the end of the day, John Dorsey can talk about giving second chances and third chances, and I'm all about that. I'm all about helping someone. I'm all about giving people another opportunity, a second chance, even a third chance, fourth chance. But what lesson is Kareem Hunt learning from all this after losing his job in November and then getting another job in February where he's still going to get $1 million payday? Like, what has he learned? And that's my bigger problem. People that display poor behavior and display tendencies that are destructive and self-destructive need to have ramifications for the actions that they have, that they commit. Kareem Hunt can be truly sorry, but what has he learned? He lost his job, and less than 4 months later, another team signed him before free agency even begun, and he got $1 million payday. Business as usual. When we come back, we're going to lift it up a little bit. Great story from our next guest, Deontay Spencer, one of Acadiana's own, right here on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game.
From his 31-yard line, Trevor Harris has time, throws, and Deontay Spencer has the catch, and he's gone. Deontay Spencer, touchdown.
Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsons III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're live from the 237 Roof Studios here in Upper Lafayette. And we're proud to welcome on our next guest. He is a New Iberia native. He played his high school ball for the Westgate Tigers. He wasn't a heralded prospect, but that did not stop him from being a record-setting and All-American at McNeese State, where he set a single-game record for most all-purpose yardage with 365 yards in a win against Stephen F. Austin. During his time with the Cowboys, he broke or tied 10 McNeese State records, Southland records, and NCAA records. He went undrafted, but made his way to the CFL, where he became a star kick returner and wide receiver for the Toronto Argonauts. And then the past two seasons, he became a two-time CFL All-Star with the Ottawa Redblacks, including helping them get to the Grey Cup this past season. He now is a member of the Pittsburgh Steelers after signing a reserve futures contract in early January. It's our privilege to welcome on kick returner, wide receiver extraordinaire, Deontay Spencer. Deontay, welcome to the Rap Game. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, man. How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Not a problem, brother. Glad for you to make some time. I know things are busy. It may be the off season, but for yourself, gearing up to joining the Pittsburgh Steelers and getting part in their off-season conditioning program and everything like that, I know that'll be coming up for you soon, so I appreciate you making some time. So let's start there, man. Let's start with, I know you had a tryout and it appeared that you were going to be headed trying to become a member of the Indianapolis Colts, but then the opportunity came along with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Walk me through it. How did you end up becoming a member of Steeler Nation?
I just want to start off by saying the intro, that was a great intro. just, you know, the whole process of me becoming a Pittsburgh Steeler, man, it was a great experience. But, you know, I ended up right after the Grey Cup in November, I ended up, you know, just having a couple workouts scheduled, and I ended up going to the Minnesota Vikings as the first team I worked out for. Had a great workout with them. Ended up going to Buffalo, worked out for those guys. And then I actually, you know, Pittsburgh was the last place I was going to work out, because I only told my agent I was going to do, you know, three workouts. And the Colts were in, the, you know, in that discussion, but I ended up, you know, just not going to meet with them. But, you know, just signing with Pittsburgh, man, it was one of those things where it's kind of crazy because, you know, I ended up missing one of my flights to Pittsburgh. So the whole time, you know, it's just racing in my head. Like, you know, it's just not starting. No, it's just not going good. You know, I missed my second flight. And, you know, just a lot of things were running through my head. But once I got there and, you know, ended up seeing the facilities and meeting everybody from the GM to, you know, Coach Tomlin and everybody like that, you know, I just felt like it was home. And it was just, I felt like the feeling was just right. You know, I had worked out for a lot of teams without, you know, within a few years that I was in the CFL. And for some reason, this one just felt right. And, you know, I was ready and comfortable making a decision to going back down south. And, you know, it's just a blessing, man, that I can, you know, say I'm a Pittsburgh Steeler. And, you know, hopefully, you know, I can go down there and, you know, make some noise and be able to contribute to a great organization.
We're talking to Deontay Spencer. He's a member of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he's a two-time CFL All-Star. He also set a new all-purpose record in the CFL with 496 yards in a game. Deontay, I want to talk about National Signing Day because you tweeted out something that I found extremely interesting. And your story should serve as a reminder of just what happens when hard work and determination, where it can get you. You know, you tweeted out on National Signing Day, no stars in high school, signed to McNeese State, played 4 years, graduated, no combine invite, Chicago Bears rookie camp invite, undrafted free agent by the Rams, signed to the CFL Toronto Argonauts, signed to the CFL Ottawa Redblacks, signed to the NFL Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, for you, I just think that serves as a great reminder, right? Because I think we put so much of an emphasis on these guys and the star ratings and recruiting and everything like that. And here you are. You weren't a very heralded recruit coming out of Westgate, yet you found your way to McNeese, rewrote the record books at the school for the Southland Conference and for the NCAA. Have you always been that guy that's kind of had a chip on your shoulder, but in a good way, always wanting to kind of prove people wrong, or is it more just you wanting to accomplish your goals and other people, what they think, doesn't matter?
I think it's the second one, you know, just kind of accomplishing things and trying to, for me, reaching my goals. It's crazy because, you know, I feel like everything, you know, I've done within my life and, you know, to get to this point, whether it was school, whether it was sports, I never liked losing or I never liked, you know, failing, you know. So for me, it was one of those, it was just a feeling that I never wanted to be, you know, felt that I didn't put my all into what I was doing. And, you know, like I said, with the whole recruiting process and me coming out of high school and not being highly recruited, it wasn't that I wasn't, you know, able to play at the next level. It was just, you know, I was just, you know, never looked at to be as, you know, the potential of me just being one of those guys that was, you know, fast. Or it was always something that coaches always questioned. Like, it was my speed, was it my size, was it, you know, just coming from, you know, Westgate, not playing in true position, like all those things, you know, factored in. But it's just the point of, you know, me being determined, me just trying to accomplish, you know, something that I've always wanted to do in my life. And that is just be successful. No matter what I did and no matter what I put my mind to, I knew I can achieve it. So it wasn't, you know, proving people wrong. Obviously, I had that chip on my shoulder where I go into certain situations where, you know, I think I'm against the odds, you know. So for me, it's always outworking the next person or, you know, whatever I'm going to do, I'm going to make sure that, you know, I want to be first or I want to, you know, for me, it's, you know, I don't like being second. So it was just something that growing up I always took pride in, whether it was school, whether it was, you know, anything in life. You know, people don't realize I graduated top 10 in my class coming out of high school, you know, graduated school early. And that wasn't, you know, I just can't say that I was the smartest person. You know, it was just a lot of hard work that I put into, you know, my academics. So it's the same way for football, man. I just approach things differently. And, you know, that's what I'm trying to, you know, just kind of give along and give these kids that's, you know, inspiring to be like me or be like, you know, guys that they see on TV, man. It's a lot of hard work you got to put into this thing. And whether you want to be an athlete, a doctor, you know, a lawyer, a teacher, whatever you do, you have to be 100% committed and give, you know, the effort that whatever you put in, that's what you're going to get out. So,
what kind of advice, Deonte, would you give someone, say, like B.J. Blunt, who's had a terrific career there at your alma mater, McNeese State, the last couple of years, became an All-American, yet didn't get an invite to the Combine? Kind of a similar situation for yourself. And, you know, he's a guy that a lot of people think is a hell of a football player, but he's a little undersized for the quote-unquote prototypical linebacker. What kind of advice do you give guys like B.J. Blunt, who are stellar players at the FCS level? What kind of advice would you give them as they go through this as they go through this process?
You know, my best advice to him and to other athletes like him is, you know, don't put the stereotype that coaches or people are going to put around you. You have to believe in yourself, believe in your craft, and just stay committed to working, man. And, you know, for guys like me in that situation and also for, like, Blunt, you know, once you get to high school, all those guys that have those stars, man, that goes away. And, you know, once you're there, everybody's in the exact same position. So at the end of the day, you know, coaches are going to go with those guys who are going to produce and who is going to help that team win. And with that being said, it's the hard work that you put into the game. And, you know, just like Blunt, you know, don't get discouraged, man. Like, a lot of guys, you know, don't get the combine invites and still get drafted. You know, I think I seen a statistic the other day that there's more guys in the NFL right now than, you know, guys that got drafted fourth through seventh round. So So that just shows, you know, the willingness of guys who go undrafted and the hard work and the effort they put into, you know, just being successful. So, you know, my advice to him is to continue to work. And, you know, at the end of the day, he's still going to get that opportunity to be on that NFL level. And once you get there, it doesn't matter what school you went to, where you come from. You know, you just have to play football. So
we're on with Deontay Spencer, former McNeese State All-American and CFL two-time All-Star. Deontay, tell me, you know, you've been in camp, you've been a practice squad player and been in training camp with a few different NFL teams, and you've had a stellar career in the CFL. Tell us, for those that maybe are not that aware, what's the biggest difference in the level of competition and the style of play maybe between the NFL and the CFL?
I would say it's really, I mean, you might get some freakish athletes on the D-line and, you know, offensive linemen are just, you know, it's just a different breed, you know, inside the box. But as far as skill position-wise, it's really the same thing. You know, I play guys who come from the CFL that go down south and guys who, you know, play down south and come up north. And for them, it's always the transition of learning the game. You know, the talent-wise and the skill set-wise is always pretty much, you know, down the par. You might get those you know, like you see those Julio Jones and Odell Beckham, like those guys are generational talents. But at the end of the day, the skill set is pretty much there. It's just putting in the work, crafting your game, and just understanding what are you doing. So the biggest adjustment was for me just coming from a lower level school, you know, coming from McNeese, was the knowledge of the game. You know, there's so many different things that, you know, those guys at the higher level schools, the Alabamas and the LSUs, those guys are getting, you know, coached up to being, you know, professionals at that level. So once you get to the next level, it's all about, you know, grasping the thing of understanding the football game. And that's what I think I did well going into the CFL. It was a different game, but I understood the game, you know, the different plays we were running, adjusting to the waggle, and just adjusting to the whole culture change of learning a professional playbook and understanding coverages, all those different things. So for you know, just the knowledge of the game, that's the biggest thing, man. If you can go into the game and understand what are you doing, that allows you to play faster. And, you know, coaches begin to gain confidence within you, and that just makes the game much easier. So I think that's the biggest thing, is understanding the game. And, you know, that's what I think I did well of.
Deontay, your game plan, you have to let us know, man. The first time that you're going to score a touchdown as a member of the Pittsburgh Steelers, are you going to bust out that limbo celebration that you had with Ottawa, man?
You know, I thought about it, but, you know, I got a couple of celebrations still saved up that I didn't quite get to yet. So I think I might bust one of those out. But, you know, the limbo kind of went viral and it kind of took off, so. You know, I think I might switch it up, so we'll see. I never know until I get in the end zone. So.
We're on with Deontay Spencer, two-time CFL All-Star, All-American at McNeese State, New Iberian native. Deontay, what do you enjoy more, man, when you're out there on the field? You're a sensational return specialist and wide receiver, and you find a way to get in the end zone both ways. You're immensely talented that way. But what do you enjoy doing more? Is it busting off that return for a touchdown that just brings everyone to their feet, or is it burning a DB and him underestimating just how quick and how physical you are at only 5'8"?
I would think, you know, it's crazy. Nobody ever asked me that. I would think it would be more as a receiver, you know, just being one of those guys that's, you know, undersized or however you want to put it. You know, I work extremely hard, you know, to craft my game to being a receiver, because when I went into the CFL, I was kind of, that was my, you know, my knock. You know, I was a guy that was able to make big plays in college, but I never really garnered the true position of being a receiver. And as my career, as it, you know, still prolongs, I've always, you know, trying to become a complete receiver and work my game toward being one of the elites. So each and every year, you know, I just keep getting better at wideout And that's what I think excites me the most, you know, because I put so much, you know, time and effort into, you know, being one of those elite receivers. You know, I kind of think the return game and, you know, doing all that kind of just came natural to me. You know, I never really returned in high school. I played quarterback and stuff like that. So once I got to college, it was kind of they just threw me out there and I just was able to make plays. But receiver's been a challenge for me, and, you know, I love the challenge. And I think, you know, just as a testament, you know, where I've come from to now, just becoming a complete, you know, receiver. So I think that's the most exciting for me is just scoring touchdowns at wide receiver.
And Deontay, we'll wrap it up with this, man. I know you're excited to get to work with the Steelers and be out there and be running routes with the likes of Juju Smith-Schuster and catching passes from Big Ben. But let me ask you, what's up next? I know things are going to get kind of fast and furious for you here in the next few months. So what's your game plan and what's your process going to be between now and the start of camp?
You know, right now I've just been, you know, training, kind of just getting the body back to where I want it to be, you know, going into OTAs. And, you know, I'm going to take a vacation, you know, because you don't want to put too much on your body. So I'll take a little vacation just for myself and, you know, just get back to, you know, to understanding the game, start looking at a bunch of different things, the plays, the routes, coverages, stuff like that. But, you know, in the meantime, you know, I'm going to just be, you know, dipping in back home, you know, just, you know, talking to the youth, you know, and just trying to inspire and motivate, you know, the people back home, you know, in New Iberia and all across, you know, the world. I try to use my platform as much as possible. So I'm going to do that. And, you know, I'm in the possible workings of, you know, trying to get a football camp together. And, you know, that's something that I have on my plate that's, you know, just that I'm looking forward to. You know, I'm trying to do that. So hopefully I can get that started, you know, after OTAs once I come back home for a month or so. So that's what I'm going to be doing. And, you know, when I'm home, I just like to chill and relax and stay low-key and, you know, just enjoy my family. So,
well, Deontay, man, I appreciate you coming on the show, brother. I know you're busy, and congratulations on all the success that you had. And we'll be pulling for you, man, to making an impact with the Pittsburgh Steelers this year, man. I know there'll be plenty of folks, even though this is Who Dat country, there'll be plenty of folks that'll be proudly, especially down there in the Barry, proudly waving those terrible towels around for you, brother.
Oh, 100%, man. Thank you for having me.
Deontay Spencer, 2-time CFL All-Star, All-America at McNeese, trying to make his dreams come alive at the age of 26 with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Good interview. Good guy. We'll wrap up this edition of Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game. Just a reminder, coming up tonight, LSU at Kentucky, pregame, 5:30, right here on 103.7 The Game. First tip, then at 6 o'clock. Coming up after us, Jim Rome Show from 11 to 2. Then the Jordy Holberg Show with Jordy Holberg from 2 to 4. And then an abbreviated version, but still kick-ass version of Bumper to Bumper Sports with the brother Ben Love from 4 to 5:30. I want to thank Les East from Crescent City Sports for coming on, breaking out some Pels. And I want to thank Deontay Spencer, Westgate's own, from the Barry, coming on, living his dream of trying to make it into the NFL. Make sure to tune in tomorrow, 9 to 11. It'll be a jam-packed show as always. Y'all be safe out there today. Talk to you soon.